Well, hello again, Turdville. It is Thursday, August 27th to be exact. It's time for another A2A presentation. And frankly, I had no idea that it was already last May, like 14, 15 months ago, since we had Dr. Dave Janda in the house for one of these. I thought time just flies. I thought it was like maybe 6 months ago. I knew we kind of left it hanging and we had to get back to you, Doc, but I had no idea it was 15 months ago.
I didn't either.
Isn't that amazing? I looked it up on my site. I'm like, that was May? Anyway, May of last year, I mean. Anyway, for those of you that don't know Dr. Janda, you need to follow him on Twitter. You need to listen to his weekly radio program. He's an orthopedic surgeon by trade. So got a little hip or knee action you need worked on. Fly to Michigan. I'm sure he'll help you out. But I don't know, maybe Dave, we call it your life's work instead. Who knows? He's informing us and working on his program, Operation Freedom. Dave has been a consultant to every presidential administration since Reagan, everyone except the Obama administration, I should point out. A healthcare policy.
And you should also point out, none of them listened other than Reagan.
Good point.
That's how effective I've been.
But in all that consultancy work, you've built up a long list of contacts, not only in the media, but in the military, clandestine services, all that kind of stuff. So Dave is privy, just because he's a good guy and knows all these folks. They tell him things that they probably – is this like a confessional when they call sometimes, Dave? They're like, hey, Dave, I got to tell you.
You know, it's interesting because, as you mentioned, I got involved in the healthcare policy stuff with Reagan, who actually had locked onto my information, the work I was working on in prevention, as a means of cutting healthcare costs, which only makes sense. You know, single most effective way of cutting healthcare costs is not rationing care, but preventing people from, in my case, getting injured or developing diseases. Well, you would think that would be the standard philosophy in medicine. It's not. I can be diplomatic and tell you a bunch of different reasons, but the answer is there isn't any money in prevention, so that's why it's not the go-to means of cutting costs through big medicine. The big medicine folks, the AMA folks, don't like the prevention techniques we talk about. Reagan did, but Reagan was very different from, and it was at the very end of the Reagan administration that he had called me. That's when our stuff really started gaining a lot of national recognition through the media. And Reagan was very supportive of it. His Surgeon General, C. Everett Koop, was very supportive of it. When Reagan left office and then George I took over, he wasn't very supportive of it. Either was his kid, either was Clinton. And again, a lot of answers I can give you, but you know, Reagan's response to our work was, look, I don't care who it makes mad. If it makes the insurance companies mad or the pharmaceutical companies mad, I don't care. Just do what's right for people, which is, in my opinion, the right answer. The other three administrations, both Bush's and Clinton, it was the same. They said, well, you know, we think this is good stuff, but the bottom line is that this really bothers big insurance, big pharma, big medicine. And we got a lot of money from all those three entities, so now we're going to put this stuff on the back burner. Which ultimately, because they did that, ultimately led to this debacle, this horrendioma we have now of Obamacare. But while I was doing this over all the years, and so they kind of bring me in as their pet rat and talk to them about what they should do, not that they would listen, but I got to know a lot of people within a lot of different administrations. And then, for example, the Treasury Department would call me and say, hey, we got some issues on healthcare. Can you talk to us about this? So who's in the Treasury Department, the Secret Service? So you meet those guys. And so Pentagon would call and say, okay, well, we're looking at healthcare issues and we're looking at this and we're looking at prevention stuff and we're implementing some of your ideas in a number of bases around the world. So you get to know the military guys. Then the intelligence guys would get involved because they were interested in this kind of approach. So you get to know some of them. So over time, you know, I've developed this network of people that I consider friends and people that I believe very, very honest on what's really happening in the world. And it's very different many times from what we see in the media. Yeah. In the mainstream media.
Right. Well, and
many times the alternative media is more closer to what's really going on, at least from what I hear on the ground level than what's being reported in the mainstream.
Well, and let's just talk about that before we get to some of the listener questions. And if this is your first A to A, again, we do this in this GoToWebinar platform so that if you'd like to submit questions directly to Dr. Janda, you can do so and through this dialog box on your screen, and then I can relay them on to him. But so while everyone out there listening ponders whatever question they'd like to ask Dr. Janda, and I've got a couple that have been emailed in ahead of time. I mean, between your list of contacts and between all of the folks that you now know through terrific radio program, Operation Freedom, which airs every Sunday afternoon out of Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I'm sure a lot of folks listening to this make it a regular stop by your website on Mondays to check out whoever the guests were and listen. Between all that you have learned from all the folks that you talk to and the folks you have on your show, I mean, it sure seems like it's coming at us really fast at this point. You know, it's like the story we used to hear, or the analogy that used to be used a couple of years ago about birth pangs and how they just get stronger and stronger and faster and faster, or less time between them as you approach the big event. Here in the late summer of 2015, it certainly seems like those pangs are pretty strong and at a regular interval at this point. Dave, we just had news this morning. China's dumping treasuries at a record rate, liquidating 10% of the treasuries they have in their foreign reserves in just the last couple of weeks. You've got all this currency market disruption. You've got the stock markets going crazy. What do you think of all this? What did you try to connect the dots?
Well, a couple things. First of all, kudos to you and the folks on this site, because folks on TF Metals Report and yourself, Craig, were talking about what was printed today on Zero Hedge 3-4 days ago as a potential situation that the Chinese were dumping. You know, I'll tell you something. The folks I know in the military and in the intel world have told me for a long period of time, we're already in a war, and in particular with China. I think all the things that we're seeing with the devaluation of the yuan, with the two explosions on mainland China, the ammo dump explosion last Sunday night in the United States military facility. The folks I know are telling me that they're really all linked, right? So if we take a step back, China was apparently anticipating that there was going to be some at least positive statements about them joining the SDR, and that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And very soon after that, next thing you know, China is announcing they're devaluing the yuan. And the thought process, at least from some folks I know, thought that the United States had a big say, obviously, in the IMF coming out and saying to China, no, hold your horses for a year. That was seen from the folks I know, they have a lot of experience in China from the intel world. That was seen as a loss of face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And which is probably the worst thing that could happen when you're dealing with China
in that type of culture.
So, right. And their response to that, from the contacts they have told me, was, okay, we're going to play that game. Well, guess what? We're going to devalue our currency. And essentially, you know, the whole currency war thing, right?
Right.
And you know, Rickards wrote a book on it. A lot of people wrote books about it. And essentially, what actually Rickards wrote about, a lot of it is actually starting to play out. Rickards, I think, is a very good source. I have some internal questions on Rickards, because Rickards was a big player in the long-term management, capital management, when it went bust, kind of the resolution of that. And so it always makes you wonder, you know, what side is this guy playing on?
If I interrupt you for a second, because while we're on the topic, with all the spooks that you know, I mean, they ever allude to, because nobody really has a handle on this guy. He seems kind of slippery in a sense, you know, and that, you know, he brags about his connections to the CIA and he brags about, you know, how he does all this war gaming and all that stuff. But then all of a sudden, he's everywhere. you know, you can't open your computer without him being in one of your Google ads, as if he just has unlimited funding to push his point of view.
And I think you know, your antenna is raised by that, and so is mine. And the impression I get, there are some people that are put on point by the people that we don't like, that we don't agree with. Let's call them the criminal international banking syndicate.
I like it.
And they're put on point to be some information agent, but also some disinformation agent.
Right.
Right. And if you look at, when I look at the exposure Rickards gets, my conclusion is that he gets that exposure because he's also playing for the bad guys.
Yeah, right.
And understand how these guys think, because I can tell you my experiences in Washington. I've been at, like, for example, domestic policy council meetings in Washington, not the West Wing of the White House, but in the old executive office building, which is part of the White House. And I can tell you that every time I would be in a meeting like that, there would be a Rockefeller in the room. Okay. Now that Rockefeller was not a doc, or that had no functional medical knowledge. So my question initially would be, why is this guy in the room? Well, it became obvious. The guy's in the room because he's there to report to the higher ups.
Not like Senator Jay Rockefeller or somebody.
No. I'm talking about like one of Nelson Rockefeller's kids.
Seriously, one of these people would just be there like to take notes and.
Yes.
Huh.
Yes. So my point is that I truly believe Rickards. So the way these guys think, and you know, in the last presidential debate, whether you love them or hate them, Trump made a comment about the bankers, about the banksters, right? About when they were talking, filing, four of his companies filing bankruptcy, and goes, listen, you look at these people in the eye and they are pure nasty. They are, I don't think he said evil, but he got almost to the word evil. And I've looked in some of those people's eyes because, you know, they're in the room sometimes when we were at these meetings. And in fact, there was always a Rockefeller in the room. And they are evil. They are nasty. But here they have one, in their code of ethics, I have come to learn over years, is that they don't want to flush the toilet while all of us are still in the shower without giving us notice. There's this little tiny kernel of ethics they have where they believe they have to try to at least put some hints out to all of us useless eaters, as they call us, that something big and bad is coming around the corner. Because that way they can try to justify it in their own little squirrel brain that they have, the squirrel brains that they have, right? So my point is that I think Rickards is one of the people they put on point to give us some information to us useless eaters. So knowing full well that the vast majority of us, quote, useless eaters, because that's what they call us, aren't going to really either understand, or we're not going to pay attention because we're too busy watching Dancing with the Stars. But at least in their own little minds, they can think, okay, well, hey, you know what? We let them know.
You know, I'm reminded of that. There's some dude down in Texas that's been keeping a running list of the warnings that from the IMF and other places over the last 18 months or something. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
I'll see if I can.
And I think there's something to that. I do think there's something to it. They are in the process of flushing the toilet, and they see us as being in the shower, but they are just trying to give us a little bit of a heads up, just so in their own little minds that they feel that, well, you know what, they had it coming, but you know what, we tried to let them know.
Yeah.
And you know, I go back. I was going through some stuff last night. You know, the musician songwriter Frank Zappa. Here's something Frank Zappa said a long time ago. Listen to this, because this is really pertinent, I think, to our discussion. Quote, the illusion of freedom will continue as long as it's profitable to continue the illusion. At the point where the illusion becomes too expensive to maintain, they will just take down the scenery. They will pull back the curtains. They will move the tables and chairs out of the way, and you will see the brick wall at the back of the theater, end quote.
Pretty profound.
And I think
stuff.
That's where we are right now.
Yeah, from what, 30 years ago you wrote that before he died?
Yeah.
You know,
and I think that's where we are, because when you look at all this stuff, what are we looking at? You look at Agenda 21, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the brick wall we're looking at, Agenda 21, which is a UN directive passed by the Bush or signed on by Bush 1. It's also signed on by Clinton, signed on by Bush 2. What does it do? It gets rid of our property rights. Okay. And in the addendum to Agenda 21, and I know this sounds conspiratorial, but read it. Get the Agenda 21. You can get it. You can go to your local library. It's in your local library. Get the addendum to Agenda 21. Michael Shaw was on our show on Operation Freedom. He's the single probably most knowledgeable guy in Agenda 21. And he's the guy who clued me off on not just reading Agenda 21, but the supplement to it. And in the supplement, it talks about their ultimate goal is not my words. It's in black and white. A 90% population reduction worldwide. So the back of the wall is Agenda 21. It's the National Defense Authorization Act, right, that says that any of us, you, Craig, me, any of our listeners, we could be indefinitely detained, interrogated, and imprisoned without legal representation or without a trial, right? Or if it's the NSA spying on us. Or Obamacare, which essentially strips us of our health care freedom. That's the back of the wall Zappa was talking about. Or the IRS scandal. I mean, as you know, we mentioned this before when I was on with you. I have personal experience with that, a nine-month goat rodeo of the IRS investigating myself and my family. And when our accountants initially asked them why, and they said it three, four more times afterwards, was because, quote, it starts with his radio show, end quote. Right?
Right.
So, or if you look at the hundreds of executive orders, that's the back of the wall that Zappa was talking about. Or the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that essentially blows apart our economy further. Or if it's this executive amnesty thing with the immigration, illegal immigration, and essentially blowing apart our sovereignty. The United States is the speed bump to the New World Order, and they're taking complete control. And the only way they can take complete control is getting rid of the United States. And that's what, whether it's Agenda 21 or Obamacare or the NDAA or TPP or the what's happening with our borders with immigration, or if you look at the criminal manipulation of the markets that we talk about every day, of every market, it's all about taking down the curtains, like Zappa said, and seeing the brick wall at the back of the theater.
Certainly seems like we're close to getting at each other's throats. You know, whether it's Ukraine, where World War III could be tripped at almost any time, or whether it's just all the way just internally here in the U.S. You know, I made a thought cross my mind the other night, about a week ago, Doc. I was watching the nightly news. I don't know why. I must have just found myself in front of the TV at the wrong time. And it was a night they were talking about Trump had given an interview to that Chuck Todd guy, I think, on an airplane.
Yeah.
And he was laying out his idea that he's going to deport every single illegal alien. Mm-hmm. And I kind of took that to its logical conclusion. I thought, if it gets to the point where, you know, he's a nominee or he might even be elected, this dude's George Wallace. I mean, somebody... You know, there will be somebody that will try to keep that from happening. And I thought, can you imagine what would happen to this country if an event like that were to take place? It just seems it's everything hangs together by a thread at this point.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. I'm a lot older than you are, Craig, and mm-hmm. I can tell you in my lifetime, I think there have been two presidents that I'm aware of that tried to buck the syndicate, right? Because I believe all these folks, I really believe this, I believe all these folks that get to the White House, to the Oval Office, are puppets of the syndicate. That's
yeah.
how they get there.
Look who they were trying
and,
to
and
do.
I believe Kennedy tried to buck the system. And when that happened, he was put in that car in Dallas, and he was taken out. And I we talk about this on my show every so often, and we've had Craig Roberts, who's a former sniper with the United States military, yeah. on the show talking about it. We've had Abe Bolden, who's the first African-American Secret Service agent, who was a Secret Service agent to President Kennedy, who left – Kennedy's detail 6 months before he got killed because he felt Kennedy was getting set up for something bad, mm-hmm. and actually went to Kennedy and talked to him about that. So I believe Kennedy was bucking the syndicate, and the syndicate took matters in their own hands, and I do not believe Lee Harvey Oswald was the assassin of John Kennedy. I believe there's umpteen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of facts that corroborate that statement. I also believe that the other person that was not part of the syndicate in my lifetime when he got into office was Ronald Reagan. And if you'll remember, 2 months after Ronald Reagan got into office, he was shot. And I truly believe that there was a reason that was not just a one crazy guy, John Hinckley. Yes, he had the gun. But there are some links, very firm factual links of the Hinckley family with some other families that would have benefited by Reagan dying.
And a warning message as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they anticipated him living, but he did. And I think Reagan turned the tables on the syndicate. I think Reagan knew who was involved, and I think he probably said to them, "I know what happened here, and the bottom line is we're not pushing ahead with your agenda. We're going to push ahead with my agenda," and I think he probably told him, if you don't like it, we'll out who was involved in this. And I think they pulled in their horns for 8 years.
Interesting.
But I think since then, and you know, when I started my show October of 2010, the first thing I said is the day Ronald Reagan left office was the day our country forever changed, because every person who's held that office since him has owned and operated by a criminal banking syndicate.
Yeah,
and I truly believe that. I believe it's true of the Bushes. I believe it's true of the Clintons. I believe it's true of Obama. They are all puppets of the syndicate.
No doubt about
it. And your point about Trump is I'm not convinced Trump is a syndicate guy. I'm sure he has contacts into the syndicate, but if you look at and listen to what he said at that first debate, you know, and it's those four companies that filed bankruptcy, who took it in the shorts the most? It was the banksters. So I'm not convinced he's a team player with the syndicate. And it could be, you're right. I mean, the last guy who ran for office that wasn't a team player with the syndicate was Ross Perot.
Yeah.
And I can tell you for a fact, because I had been contacted by Perot's people on healthcare policy, I truly believe, based on what I know and what I saw and what I was told, was, you know, Ross Perot was doing pretty well. And then he jumped out of it all of a sudden, right?
Right.
And everybody said, well, he's kind of dingy. Well, he might have been kind of dingy, but I don't think our country would be in this kind of a mess if Ross Perot had become president, to be very honest with you.
He tried to recognize some of the problems 20 years ago.
Right. But I believe the reason why Ross Perot got out of the race is because his family, in particular his son, was life was put on the line. And if Ross Perot continued to campaign, he'd be minus one son. And he said, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
And that's why he pulled back. And then once they got enough evidence to use, because remember, Washington, with all these scum, it's all leverage. And when you have enough leverage on these guys, you can kind of move along down the road. I think he ended up getting enough leverage as Bush's popularity was going down, Clinton's was coming up. He felt that he could jump back in, knowing full well probably that he wasn't going to win, but he wanted to play out. He wanted to play his hand out. So, yeah, I have very significant concerns for people like Trump, or for that matter, Carly Fiorina. I think Carly Fiorina is very smart. I think she's very gutsy. I'm not convinced she's part of the syndicate either. But if any of these people get enough momentum, I think you're going to see a lot of – all of a sudden investigations occurring on them. I'm sure they're already working on it against Trump. And if that doesn't work, then they have to worry about their safety.
Personal safety.
Yes, absolutely. Because these guys on the other team are truly evil, and they will stop at nothing. They will stop at nothing to achieve their endpoint.
Well,
and I think I do think that we're all very frustrated this week seeing what's going on, right? Because, you know, we all know the Dow should be at 1,000, and we all know that gold, you know, should be at, you know, whatever, 20,000,
yeah.
Pick your number. And silver should be running at 800 or 1,000 or whatever it might be. We all know that's where it should be if you just look at basic supply demand. But it's not. And the reason is because the criminal syndicate still has some control. But I think what we see right now is we basically have a war occurring in the financial markets. And eventually, as you had alluded to earlier, it's probably going to spill into the munitions theater. And I think we already saw some of it. I think that, you know, my contacts out of China tell me that, you know, these two explosions we saw in China were direct results of China devaluing the yuan. In particular, there's a group of folks called the, and I'm probably going to say it wrong, this pronunciation, the Uyghurs. It's U-Y-G-H-U-R-S. They're an Islamic faction in China.
Mm-hmm.
My contacts tell me that they were the ones behind the explosions. I know there's some folks that believe that there were some nuclear devices used. My contacts are telling me they weren't nuclear devices, that they were actually, in fact, heavy-duty munitions, more in a truck bomb category, multiple truck bombs. Add to that truck bombs that are put in locations that have ordnance
that have other stuff.
Have other stuff, whether it's magnesium or fire. I mean, you know, folks on your site, I think, are very much on it as far as what was in those areas. But understand something. For this basic kind of, I'm not going to say backward, but I'm going to say not very, they don't have a lot of access to a lot of heavy-duty munitions, a lot of these folks,
right.
The Uyghurs, right? They're not very sophisticated. So obviously there might have been some folks that were more, quote, sophisticated, let's say maybe more evil, that utilize their animosity and hatred toward the existing Chinese government, help them get access to munitions, help them get access to location to blow these things. I also think, based on what I've heard, that the military depot explosion could well have been retribution, saying, okay, you blew our stuff up, okay, guess what? You know,
it's
kind of a tit for tat.
Far too coincidental for that not to.
Yeah, I think so. And now you see China coming out and saying, yeah, okay, we are dumping treasuries. I mean, you have a hot war going on right now in the currency market. And you're also starting to see examples of that hot war spilling over from the currency market into the munitions market. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're going to see more of this because I said to my contacts, you know, okay, so now we have this going. What's the next shoe that's going to drop? And the next shoe that they tell me is going to drop is you're going to see this escalate outside of the currency markets.
So not a financial war, more of a actual geopolitical.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I unfortunately believe the syndicate that runs our country, and in particular the executive offices in our country, in the White House in particular, they've been itching for a war, whether it's itching for Syria,
mm-hmm.
whether it's itching for the Ukraine to incite something, whether it's not, you know, they've been itching. They've been looking for a trigger
yes.
to pull, because when they pull that trigger, what happens? Well, a lot of people die. Remember, Agenda 21, 90% population reduction worldwide. You don't want a world war. I don't want a world war. Nobody on our site wants a world war. But there's some goofballs in Washington that probably be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's in, and I'm sure the Rockefeller family and the Rothschild family would be fine with it. Because you know what? They're figuring, hey, you know what? We'll have a heads up. We'll be in our bunkers. We'll be
exactly.
okay.
Exactly.
See, because their ultimate goal, it's control. Control of the masses, whatever number that masses is. And they're fine if that mass is 90% less than it currently is.
It'd be easier to control.
Because less of us will be using the natural resources that they feel are entitled just to them. And it's sick, but that's how these monsters think.
Dave, I could go on. Obviously, we could go on quite some time. We've already used a half hour, if you can believe that. So time is flying on us. And you have answered the first question that I had emailed in, was to talk about the connection in Tianjin with, what was that, Okinawa?
Yeah.
Where the other explosion was. I do want to get to my second emailed question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And again, invite anybody that has a further question that if you're listening, you have a further question you want me to ask Dr. Jan, to type it into that dialogue box of questions, and I'll ask him that next. But this is something a little bit, this kind of draws on your medical expertise, I guess, but kind of wraps in the same, some of the same topics. This comes from a site regular, goes by the name of Gazman. And it just has to do with medical care. You know, we all sit here and, you know, try to prep in a sense for all the uncertainty that's out there, whether it's stacking precious metal, you know, or some Berkey water filters and, you know, food shortages and all that kind of stuff. But what Gaz wants to know, though, is, of course, obviously getting medical care is in tough times is something we don't usually hear about. Do you have any insight into how to access medical care that might evolve in these dire economic times? And do you have any advice on how to approach maintaining access to medical care beyond having just a first aid kit, you know, in a couple months worth of prescriptions?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. Number one is having obviously some medical supplies available. You can go to a number of different sites. You know, they have these prefab medical kits available. That's number one. Number two, and this sounds kind of, I don't know, maybe a little off to some people, but I think if any access you have to physicians' assistants, nurses, therapists, docs in your community, you know, those might be people to approach.
Befriend.
And say, you know, and say, look, I'm concerned based on the things I'm hearing and things I'm reading that we're heading over the waterfall here. And I want to let you, you know, I'd like to educate you on this, and they can point them toward your site and signing up for a subscription and that kind of thing. But say, hey, look, you know, and other people have talked about this, getting kind of a group of folks of yours around you that have different specialties, different technique, different expertise in different areas. So knowing someone who's really good in the medical field, knowing someone who's really good in whatever, former military and survival skills, someone's really good in weapons use, someone really good in and essentially creating a kind of a preventive community for when this happens.
And
that sounds kind of dumb, but I'll tell you something. I think it's the best thing, because that's something our family's done, and that's what a lot of folks I know have done. And when I look at the friends I have in, you name the military community or the intelligence community or whatever, they all see something coming, okay? And they see something coming that's not so good. Now, hopefully, it won't last very long. But let's say it's going to last a month, or let's say it's going to last 2 months, or let's say it's going to last 2 weeks. You know, you want to be able to come out of that tunnel at the end of that tunnel, however long it is or however short it is, or whether it's a day. You want to make sure that you got your ducks lined up ahead of time, and you got to make sure that you're in good shape when you come out. And I think, you know, sometimes if you approach some people and talk to them about this, you know, about what you see coming, and you know, just forming a loose network of folks that can intercommunicate and find a way to communicate, you know, amongst yourselves. Let's say if the internet goes down, if there's some way, either they live near you or they, however you want to do it. But I think that's a real important thing to do. And at first, people might look at you like, whoa, this is kind of crazy. Let me tell you something. I think if you, when you would have approached somebody 6, 7, 10 years ago about it, they look at you like you're nuts. You approach people now, I'll tell you something.
Yeah.
I don't care how diehard that person is. I don't care how oblivious that person is. I don't care how much. They could watch Dancing with the Stars 24/7. I'm telling you, everybody knows there's something not right.
Yeah.
And they feel very, very uneasy.
Even the slightest.
So when you talk to people, yeah, that's right. And when you talk to people, they're not going to know all the nuances everybody at this site does. But they know something's wrong. And when you start talking, you just pick out a couple things that are happening, you know, in world events. Don't you think that's kind of strange? Don't you think? And before long, people are awakening. And I think you're not going to have people putting their arm out and saying, get away from me, you're crazy. I think they'll put their arm around you and say, we need to talk more.
Yeah.
And that's the key.
Yeah.
I think, and because the more people we educate, but the way we educate them is saying, hey, look, let's form a loose group, a group where maybe right now we get together once a week and we talk about things. And before you know it, those people are like, well, why don't we get together more frequently than that and talk about this? Because I was unaware of a lot of this stuff.
It's like this, site.
And I think that's the key as far as access to healthcare. I think that you need to try to find somebody in your extended circle that has some type of healthcare background, because if you do that, they will have access to a lot of other different people. Single most effective way, I believe, to do that.
All right. Let me ask you the next question. And I don't know if this is in your area of expertise or not, but Scott wants to know if there is any bank in the USA where you would feel safe holding a significant amount of cash. He says up to $250,000, which is the FDIC limit. But is there any bank that you know of that, you know, kind of is your local bank outside the syndicate, or is it all because they're all part of the Federal Reserve system?
Yeah, you know, first of all, yeah, I don't feel comfortable with any of the big boys, you know, the Chases or the Bank of Americas or anything like that. You'll hear people, and I'm not a financial advisor, but you'll hear people talk about credit unions. I think that's okay. I mean, I think the smaller the better.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think Ed Steer said this, or who comes on my show, or maybe it was Bill Holter. It's kind of the bank of you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think the best bank that where you know you can count on is you. And whether you is taking cash or taking your precious metals and putting it in a Brinks vault, or if that means burying some of it in the backyard, protected, or if that means – but I'm concerned with anything in a bank that they can potentially just come in and take it or shut it down.
Yeah.
And I think the smaller the bank, the more community bank, you're probably more protected than you are with the big boys that have, you know, trillions of dollars of derivatives on their books. Supposedly credit unions are safer, but I think when it all hits, I mean, just look at Greece, right?
Right.
I mean,
when
Greece hit, I don't think there was from the context I have, there wasn't a bank open.
There wasn't
big, little, or medium.
You're a smaller bank, so you can still get as much money out of your ATM rather than, you know, the First National Bank of Greece, which is shut down.
Right.
If JP Morgan or any of these other big banks tumble, I mean, that was the whole idea allegedly behind TARP 8 years ago. It brings down everything. And it, you know, and you mentioned it's still, everything's digitized. It's all just a big confidence game. If you lose confidence in any one institution or the stock market, the whole thing unravels. And I worry, I don't know if you've ever spoken to Cheryl Atkinson, but she'd probably be an interesting person for you to speak with someday. You know, she talks about how the whatever alphabet agencies were accessing her home computer directly coming through the internet, the hardwire through Skype or whatever, listening into what she was doing, checking her files. I mean, what's to stop? I mean, I think about this all the time. I do not leave my computer hooked up. Well, hell, they could be doing it now because I'm on the hardwire right now. But what's to stop an enemy of mine within the government planting, you know, child pornography on my computer? And then they show up and haul me away. And what defense do I have? I didn't even know it was there, but somebody planted it there, and then they confiscate all my accounts. I mean, all of this is possible, regardless of.
Just look at talking about evaporation of material too. Just look at what you went through with MF Global and every customer,
poof.
Right? Yeah. Everything just got blipped out.
Right.
You know, the bottom line is they control everything, and you need to try to make it so that they control less of everything.
Right.
And across the board, right? So, for example, one of the things I do with my computers that helped us, because we had notifications actually through our service providers that somebody in Washington, when we were going through our IRS thing, was trying to hack into my computers and my wife's computers.
There you go.
Now, we block that because we use this crypto hippie product. They're a sponsor of our show, but
I've known
Paul Rosenberg. Did a lot of stuff with NASA and the military and the NSA. He used to do all the encryption stuff. He did the encryption stuff for us. Blocked it. They couldn't get access. That's why they were having to try to come through our service providers. But so my philosophy is, when you deal with these people, and don't think that just because you're not, you know, Craig Hemke, or you're not on a radio show, or you're not on a TV show, that they're not going to do it. No, these guys are pigs.
Yeah,
they want to, and I say that to the pigs who are listening to us from the NSA, because I know they are. The bottom line is that, you know, you have to try to minimize the control they have over you.
Mm-hmm.
And they get control of your money through the banks.
Yep.
They're trying to get control of your health care through Obamacare. They're trying to get control of your mind through the mainstream media. So you have to try to find avenues around their means of control to maintain your freedoms and your liberties, and to make sure that you can make them even greater than they are now.
Doc, you're being extraordinarily generous with your time. I've got two other questions in queue, though, and so I want to use that as a segue to the next one from a guy named Mike. They control your health care through Obamacare. There's always the, you know, it's all part of the angst and frustration with politics is, you know, the Republican side of the party says that they're going to undo, replace, and all that stuff. Mike wants to know, can Obamacare ever be undone, or is it written in such a way that, I mean, and politics is such that we're just stuck with it?
It can be undone. It still can be undone, but you have to take somebody that's not bought off and paid off by the insurance industry and the pharmaceutical industry. And right now, if you look at all these folks running for office, I don't know of one that isn't, other than, you know, Ted Cruz talks the talk, which is good, and Rand Paul talks the talk, which is good. I actually have more faith in Ron Paul than I do Rand Paul.
Right.
But you know what? I still think old dad can kind of bend his arm a little bit. And Cruz talks the talk. The problem I have on Cruz is his wife.
Yeah,
his wife was a big Goldman Sachs person and big Merrill Lynch person. And also, she is in the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a bad acting group. Okay, that's part of the syndicate. So it's his wife. But we all know wives can, you know, they have the ultimate.
She doesn't have those positions, and he's not the Texas Attorney General or whatever, and then a senator from Texas without her connections, and that's all intertwined. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. So that's my concern about him. Although he talks the talk,
right?
But right now, the reason why Obamacare is not being repealed, even though the Republicans supposedly are running the House and running the Senate, is because the insurance industry has put huge amounts of money into their pockets as well, because the insurance industry wants Obamacare to be in place. So the only two that I don't know, that I'm not sure of, that aren't bought and paid for by some part of the syndicate is Trump and Fiorina. The problem is if you listen to the first debate with Trump, Trump talks about, well, a single-payer system is really good, like in Canada and Britain.
Yeah.
Really, Donald? Now, there's a guy who's been on my show, Roger Stone, who was one of his former advisors, who they just had a falling out recently, but he's still doing some – he still intertwines with Trump. I sent information to Roger Stone, and I said, look, here's a 6-minute YouTube video of what I did on Obamacare. It's pertinent today as it was when I did it. It has 2.9 million hits. It's the number one viewed YouTube on a public policy issue. Show this to Trump. Then he won't make any more asinine statements about single-payer systems. So, you know, I think his position on healthcare policy, what he spoke about in the first debate, was wrong, way wrong.
Yeah.
We'll see if he changes. If he doesn't, no. Then that leaves us with Fiorina,
right,
and possibly Rand Paul. But
Whether they'd be elected or
but,
not.
But
anyway.
That was a long answer to a very good question. And the answer is, when you get somebody that's not bought and paid for by the insurance industry and big pharmaceutical industry, Obamacare will go away. But until that happens, it's here to stay.
And the likelihood of that is, you know, God himself is going to have to come down and write the new legislation, I'm afraid, because that would seem to be rather unlikely. Dave, I've got one more question in queue, and then we'll wrap up with the final four. You probably remember that. This one comes from Chuck, though. Just wants to know your personal opinion of all you know, all you've considered, all the people you talk to. What do you think is the most likely thing to finally break the system? The bond market, precious metals, a huge pile of derivatives are out there, some geopolitical event. If you had to put your money on one thing being the proverbial straw, what would it be?
I think what we saw in the headline today on Zero Hedge that you guys have been talking about for 4 days. I think it's the Chinese dumping treasuries. I think that blows up the bond market. I think when that blows up, I think it all goes to hell.
The whole thing unravels, all the derivatives that are attached to it, all the interest rates spiking, all of that stuff. That makes sense.
Yep. And I think as that happens, I think you'll see the Chinese come in and announce at least a much higher level of gold that they really have, maybe not their ultimate number that they really have, but a big number. And I think you'll see them saying, hey, we're going to back our currency with some of this gold that we just talked about. I think the whole system caves in when that happens. And I think you're starting to see it right here.
They've clearly taken the last 7 years at least to build their own infrastructure. It wasn't there in 2008, so they had to keep playing ball. But I always thought that was kind of an eye-opener for them, is just how fragile this debt-based Western system was. Now they've got the AIIB, they've got the new development bank, which used to be the BRICS development bank. They've got that gold fund that they're running for everybody else. They've got all these currency swap lines they've opened up. Yeah, it would seem like if they're not ready now, they're getting awful close to be able to kind of strike out independent.
And I think the fuse was shortened. I think they clipped the fuse and lit it closer to the payload when they got slapped in the face by the IMF about the SDR.
And then they have the audacity, if there was a Western influence to those explosions, particularly the huge one in Tianjin. Seriously? Do you think we're going to intimidate? Really, I can see where that would, kind of push them further off away as well.
And don't forget, Putin will pile in too on this.
Well, and again, look at how we've driven, the whole Ukraine crisis has accelerated that as well.
Right. And Bill Holter has said you're going to see Putin come out with a truth bomb about something that's going to adversely affect the leadership structure in the United States. And I wouldn't put that past Putin. But
no.
I would see him doing that as a pylon technique once the Chinese are continuing to unravel their bond position.
You hold that card in your hand, until you need to drop it on the table.
Yep.
And that's what he'll do. All right, my friend, extraordinarily interesting conversation. And we're not going to wait 15 months to do this again. I can promise you that.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's very kind of you. We'll see what the fellow turdites say then.
Yeah. Well, and I can't let you go without hitting you with the final four.
Okay, what do you got?
Well, these are the four quickies, just, a word or a sentence or something, just a little fun. So given all our discussion about the criminal political banking syndicate and all that kind of stuff, question number one: who will be the eventual Democrat nominee for president?
It'll be Joe Biden, with the vice president of nominee being Elizabeth Warren.
Exactly.
What I believe.
That's exactly what I think as well. I did a little family poll about a month or so ago, and everybody said Hillary.
We're on
family vacation.
No, she's done.
Yeah,
no, Hillary's done.
I agree completely. All right.
Yeah, and the reason why I say Hillary's done. It's because Obama unleashed the Justice Department on her big time.
Yeah.
She's going down.
Yeah. I mean, and everyone's out there talking about Loretta Lynch being, and she, she's a serious person. But the fact that they've unleashed all of that on her, it just shows you. It goes back to South Carolina, 2008.
Yep.
I agree with you. Okay. Number two, again, you're in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So will Jim Harbaugh still be the coach of the Michigan Wolverines in 2020?
Oh, my God, yeah. In 2030, he's the new Bo.
So he's not going anywhere. We're all stuck with him.
Yeah, he's the new Bo.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Number three, who will be the Republican nominee for president, Dave?
Yeah. I can tell you it's not going to be Jeb Bush, thank Lord.
Oh, praise God.
God, it's easier for me on the Democrat side to tell you
right.
about somebody that I think on the Republican side, I think that you look at the numbers now and it looks like Trump. They're gonna do everything in their power to make sure it's not Trump.
Yes,
they will do everything in their power.
Well, and as it congeals down to just two or three other alternatives, the other 65% moves into the two or three alternatives, and that whole the math makes that gap narrow.
Yeah, the syndicate's going to push Jeb Bush big time.
Right.
I mean, big. They're going to pull every rabbit out of their hat to make it Jeb Bush.
He's got enough money.
I got a feeling that that's not going to happen, but the syndicate wants Bush.
Right.
They want Bush in the worst way.
So
that's going to happen.
Bush?
And do I wish it was actually – my pick would be Carly Fiorina.
But do you think that's who it will be? That's what we're driving
No.
All right.
No, I unfortunately I don't.
So should we put you down?
And you're going to say, who's it going to be then? And I think that probably the syndicate's going to push really hard for Jeb Bush, and they're going to do everything in their power to make it Jeb Bush. And it might be Jeb Bush, although I like to think that that won't happen, but they can rig votes. They can do all kinds of stuff.
Dave, I remember talking about this 4 years ago, making this point to people and opening a few eyes. In 1976, Reagan had all the momentum, but he wasn't the man that the syndicate wanted, so they put in Ford. Now, Reagan had to wait his turn, so that meant it was 1980, Reagan got it, and now Bush had to wait his turn. So in 88, he got it, which meant Dole had to wait his turn. And so all of a sudden, Dole got his chance in 96. And then when it came around to 2000, McCain was everybody's favorite. But Bush was the establishment guy, so McCain had to wait his turn. So then McCain got it over Romney. Romney had to wait his turn. So who's waiting their turn? You know, who's the establishment guy? It's already all laid out there. This is all just a charade that we're going through at this point. So, all right, one more. And we'll let you – we probably, by asking you this, should probably talk for another half hour. But maybe we'll just leave this as our intro to the next time we talk. Dave, should I get a flu shot this year?
No.
There you go. Do you want to expand?
Listen,
on that?
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why real quick.
Okay.
One, go to my website, davejanda.com. Listen to the interviews I've done with Shiv, S-H-I-V, Chopra, C-H-O-P-R-A. He's a doc, big time, from Canada. He was, for 35 years, he ran their vaccination program for Health Canada, which is the FDA equivalent here in the United States. Shiv will tell you, across the board, there's no reason for you to, do not do it. Here's my problem with the flu vaccinations. It's what they're cut with, what the preservatives in it. Things like thimerosal, which is mercury. Okay, you don't want mercury in your body.
No.
Okay, it makes you vulnerable to further disease. They have formaldehyde in it. Hell, that's what they put in dead people. They're going to put, you want that in you? No. So the bottom line is, no. I wouldn't, if I were you, if you have a choice about having a flu shot, I sure as hell wouldn't do it.
Take your chances with the actual flu itself.
Yeah, I would. If you're healthy and you're not debilitated or the like, I mean, no.
And
no,
I
wouldn't.
You've told me in the past about Dr. Shiv,
Chopra.
All these things that Dave's talked about, his entire catalog of interviews from the last 5 years is available at the Operation Freedom website. And go there. The link is on.
Including yours, and you always do a great job when you come on.
I am a force in the internet blogosphere.
People love you.
Dave, I'm a force in the internet.
You are a force in the blogosphere.
A veritable hurricane, I think you said once. A veritable.
A Cat 5.
I always love it. All right, my friend, thank you so much for your time. Go back.
And I thank you. And Craig, I know you put up with a lot of grief, and I thank you for what you do. I thank the community for what they do, because it is the best interactive site on the internet. It provides great information. It protects people. It educates people. And I know you get a lot of heat, and I appreciate you willing to put your neck on the line to do it.
Dave, thank you. And not to make this a mutual admiration club, but I can't imagine doing what you do. And, I'd be, every car that drove by my house, I'd be pulling the shades down, nervous.
Yeah. Well, we've had a couple episodes, that's for sure. But you know what? And we'll close with this. You know, George Washington used to say, I will die on my feet before I live on my knees.
That's right.
And I think that's the way every turdite feels.
Exactly.
And that
right.
includes myself.
Well, you keep doing the same, my friend, and we'll visit again soon, I promise. Hang in there.
Okay, buddy, you take care.
Thank you. You do the same.
Thanks for the opportunity.